Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
He kōna e purangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
Hello, I'm Simon Morris. Bob Dylan's book, The Philosophy of Modern Song, covers a wide range of topics, as wide as the subject matter of popular songs, you might say. Unsurprisingly, he's remarkably insightful, so his take on the movies is at least worth looking at. This is it. People keep talking about making America great again. Maybe they should start with the movies.
You don't understand. I could have had class. I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody instead of a bum, which is what I am. Let's face it.
Dylan offers some predictable examples of great American movies of the past. On the Waterfront, Rebel Without a Cause, High Noon, 12 Angry Men, Ace in the Hole. Mostly my favourite movies too, as it happens.
How'd you like to make yourself $1,000 a day, Mr. Boot? I'm a $1,000 a day newspaper man. You can have me for nothing.
The closest he comes to a well-thought-out argument is this. I'll read it in its entirety. Sequels and remakes roll off the assembly line nowadays with alarming frequency and astronomical budgets, he writes. But they still can't recapture the wonder and magic of the originals.
The judges left town, Harvey's quit, and I'm having trouble getting deputies.
People gotta talk themselves into law and order before they do anything about it. Maybe because down deep they don't care. They just don't care.
Well, certainly in the last few years, the cinema screens seem to have been divided between films with plenty of money but no inspiration and films with a great idea, crippled by not enough resources. But this year has been a bit different. Inspiration is unusually thick on the ground suddenly.
You've been fighting the Harkonnens for decades. My family's been fighting them for centuries. They were massacred alongside my father.
The long-awaited Dune Part 2 came out this week, not so much a sequel as the rest of a big, ambitious movie. The final contender for Best Film Oscar arrived here, though sadly you can only find American Fiction on Prime Video.
We sold the movie rights.
Yes!
We think it is going to be a bestseller.
I'm sure white people on the Hamptons will delight in it.
Yeah, we will.
It's going to be huge.
I'm not sure why American Fiction was considered too culturally specific for our cinemas, unlike the none more Argentinian film Let the Dance Begin.
No puedes esperar un poquitito que ahora vamos a parar para comer.
No puedo esperar, tengo problema de próstata. Pará, por favor, que me meo, dale, que me meo.
Otra vez.
Qué viejo está.
Let the Dance Begin features Argentina's great export, the tango. But first, the ambitious and hugely successful completion of the first of Frank Herbert's sci-fi books, Dune.
Dahashi, Fadizir.
He said that.
I got that. Thanks.
I won't be fighting for him. I'm fighting for my people.
The first Dune was over 2.5 hours long and felt every bit of it. It was slow, careful and engrossing, building a sophisticated culture as well as a series of worlds. It was also a big risk. This wasn't your usual shoot-'em-up space opera or comic book extravaganza. Dune was a serious undertaking.
It's breathtaking.
When you see sand here, imagine water. If you dive in, you can't reach the bottom.
You dive in.
Yes, it's called swimming.
I don't believe you.
It was also a massive hit. The story of two families charged by a galactic empire with producing the essential fuel for space travel, spice. At the end of part one, the repulsive Harkonnen family had attacked and destroyed the decent and glamorous Atreides family. All but two who are picked up by the desert dwellers of the planet Arrakis, or Dune.
In the shadows of Arrakis lie many secrets. But the darkest of them all may remain. The end of House Atreides.
My father didn't believe in revenge.
Now read on. The first part was all about setting up the characters, notably Paul Atreides, Timothée Chalamet, and his mum Jessica, Rebecca Ferguson. There were complaints that popular star Zendaya as Dune dweller Chani barely appeared, apart from in the trailers. Rest assured, she's all over part two.
Paul. It's okay. While since you've had one of those nightmares, tell me, what was it about?
It's only fragments.
Paul and Jessica have joined the Desert Rebels, led by Stilgar, played to the hilt by Javier Bardem. Meanwhile, the cold-hearted Emperor and his daughter, newcomers Christopher Walken and Florence Pugh, prefer to deal with the ruthless Harkonnens anyway, unhindered as they are by scruples or decency.
What if Paul Atreides were still alive?
But are the Atreides family actually all dead? There's clearly a tremor in the Force or something. It is hard not to think of that other desert-bound sci-fi blockbuster, which clearly owed a lot to Frank Herbert's Dune novels.
We believe in Fremen.
Let me fight beside you.
Reload!
An evil empire, dukes and princesses, a mystical quasi-religion, a rebellion, gigantic space vehicles, and of course, a noble young hero. The only thing missing is a slightly boneheaded best mate.
You young pup.
There he is, Gurney Halleck, played by Josh Brolin, back from the apparent dead in the last movie. But the Dune series is far more serious and literary than Star Wars. And one of the themes is a critique of a very common cliché.
The prophet. Why is that a bad thing? Use it.
Because all my visions lead to horror.
Because you lose control.
Because I gain it.
Every sci-fi or fantasy film seems to depend on a prophecy. Is someone the chosen one? Are the stars in alignment? Is this the moment foretold? And so on. The sort of thing parodied by Morgan Freeman in the Lego movie. It's true because it rhymes. But this is a smarter deconstruction.
This prophecy is how they enslave us!
It's not a prophecy. It's a story.
I don't care what you believe. I believe.
Dune is about people kept docile by faith, cynically stoked by a shady religious order of which Paul Atreides' mother Jessica is a member. The link between religion and political power never goes out of date.
I will do what must be done.
We gave them something to hope for.
That's not hope!
At first, Paul seems to be on a predictable hero's journey with his best girl by his side, the equally heroic Chani. Of course, first he must prove himself. After all, only a true Iraqi warrior can tame the monstrous and terrifying sandworms. If Paul can do it, he must be the chosen one, surely. It's true because it rhymes.
Nothing fancy.
But this is a story of power and corruption. Certainly none are initially more corrupt than the hairless white Harkonnens, led by Stellan Skarsgård, and another new face, Austin Butler, a long way from Elvis.
You humiliated our family. You humiliated me. Kiss or die.
But now that Paul himself is being given power from the Dune warriors and their giant worms, from his mother and her sinister prophecies, what then? Is this that other Star Wars plot, the corruption of Anakin Skywalker and the birth of Darth Vader?
I want you to know I will love you as long as I breathe.
You will never lose me as long as you stay who you are.
Consider what you're about to do, Paul Atreides.
Silence!
The combination of Star Wars action and war and peace ambition has won over both critics and fans. The cast list alone is undeniably impressive. But the key element, even more than Frank Herbert's increasingly convoluted books, is sci-fi master director Denis Villeneuve.
I see possible futures all at once. And in so many futures, our enemies prevail. But I do see a way. There is a narrow way through.
I have to say that I prefer Villeneuve's earlier Earthbound films like Sicario and a brilliant Middle East thriller called Incendie. And working through nearly 6 hours of Dune parts one and two, I was reminded of the one time I read Herbert's original book.
My allegiance is to you. Do you believe me?
This is a form of power that our world has not yet seen. The ultimate power.
Halfway through the first Dune, all that sand and spice and recycled bodily fluids got to me. It proved to be one of those books that, once you put it down, you can't pick it up again. Thanks to a great cast, terrific pictures and sound, and a brilliant director, I stayed the distance with the films. But am I looking forward to the inevitable part three? I don't think I can say that.
You are not prepared for what is to come.
I like Argentinian films, particularly The Landscape, which is strangely familiar somehow once you get outside big cities like Buenos Aires. All that blue sky, those hills and bush, it looks like Central Otago. No wonder they're so keen on rugby.
Dejemos a la policía tranquila, no nos metamos en problemas.
¿Qué hacen? ¿Nos quieren matar?
Acá, Julio, me los cargo estos dos viejos.
Esto es una locura.
But the people are still Latin American, and the sound of Argentina is the tango, played on a jazzed-up accordion, the famous bandoneon. The tango conquered the world in the 1930s and 40s, and thereby hangs the tale of Argentinian romantic drama Let the Dance Begin. It's the story of long-retired tango dancers Carlos and Maga. Once they played to crowned heads and political leaders. Since they split up, Carlos got married and moved to Spain, where he's now a successful TV soap star. As for Maga, she effectively disappeared. And then one day, Carlos gets a phone call.
Te ha llamado un tal Pichunito, Pichulito, algo así, desde Buenos Aires.
Pichuquito.
Eso.
It's his old bandoneon player, Pichuquito, with bad news. Marga has been found dead in her rundown Buenos Aires flat. Carlos is horrified. How has it come to this? He drops everything and rushes to Marga's funeral, where he gets a surprise.
Margarita era una estrella, un ícono nacional.
De Margarita no te acordaba ni vos.
Mira que era linda la guacha.
¿A quién le decís guacha, viejo choto?
The first of many surprises, in fact. Marga's not dead. She and Pichu just faked it for her own purposes. And she has news for the stunned Carlos. It seems they have a son he had no idea about. A son who lives a two-day drive away.
¿Pero qué broma es esta?
Tuvimos un hijo.
¿Quién es?
Vos y yo.
La madre que me parió.
Quiero ir a Mendoza a conocer a mi hijo.
Y quiero que vos me acompañes.
Carlos is sceptical and he's got no intention of getting into Pichu's rundown old van on some wild goose chase. But Marga and Pichu apply the guilt and invoke the old days. And anyway, if he didn't weaken, there'd be no movie.
No, yo esto no me subo.
No te hagas el pinole,
que no, coño, que no.
Ahora se hace el gallego también.
Yo te prometo que en dos días está de vuelta.
Let the dance begin, in other words. Three old friends, in the case of Carlos and Marga, two old lovers, in a van. In Argentina, the appeal was seeing three popular stars at work. Standout is Dario Grandinetti as the pompous Carlos, the would-be European sophisticate with his perfect English pronunciation. The more earthy Marga thinks it's hilarious.
¿No te acuerdas de cuando fuimos a la Casa Blanca a bailar para Ronald Reagan y fuimos portada del New York Times?
¿Escuchaste cómo pronuncia?
El New York Times, Ronald Reagan. ¿Qué pa' qué?
There are lies and secrets behind the lies. Even Pichu, the rough diamond musician, has his fair share of surprises up his sleeve too. He and Marga are each keeping things from Carlos, but they're obviously waiting till they think he's earned their confidences.
¿Cuándo se lo vas a contar?
Todavía no.
Hay más sorpresas.
Sí, y una grande.
Yo ya no estoy por estos trotes.
A running gag is Marga and Carlos's constant fear of being recognised. Marga, after all, has just pulled off a completely fraudulent funeral, while Carlos is worried the tabloids will reveal his scandalous love child. But you suspect they're more concerned that the one-time Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers of the tango may have been totally forgotten all these years later.
¿Recuerdas, hermano, lo linda que era?
¿Qué era, no? ¿Qué es?
A lo mejor hoy es el día de decir verdades.
Pichu, cállate.
Joder.
Let the Dance Begin is clearly a love letter from writer-director Marina Saraceschi to tango, to old stars, and in a way to Argentina. It's a delightful film if you're not expecting too many surprises, apart from one. This is the first Argentinian film I've seen for years that didn't star Ricardo Darín. I like Ricardo, but it's nice he passed the ball to someone else this time.
¿Qué es la policía?
¡La madre que me parió!
¡Dale, dale!
Yo con vos bailo hasta el himno nacional.
Qué exagerado.
American Fiction has been slightly overshadowed among this year's Oscar nominees by more high-profile movies like Oppenheimer, Barbie, Poor Things and others. But it's up for 5 awards, including Best Film, Best Actor for Jeffrey Wright, Best Script and Music. Which is why I'm a little puzzled it went straight to streaming service Prime Video here.
Monk, your books are good, but they're not popular. Editors, they want a black book.
They have a black book. I'm black, and it's my book.
You know what I mean.
The stories behind the film and the book it was based on seem remarkably similar to the plot of American Fiction. Thelonious Monk Ellison, played by Jeffrey Wright, is a respected author and academic. Respected rather than best-selling. He's too literary to be a popular black author, but as a black American author, he's too often placed in the worthy departments of bookshops.
These books have nothing to do with African American studies. They're just literature. The blackest thing about this one is the ink.
I don't decide what sections the books go in, and no one here does. That's how chain stores work.
You get the idea, this was also a regular occurrence for original author Percival Everett and to first-time film director Cord Jefferson, hitherto a TV writer. All three felt pressure to write the sort of thing best-selling author Sintara Golden turns out in American Fiction.
How did you come to write this book?
What really struck me was that too few books were about my people. Where are our stories? Where's our representation?
Would you give us the pleasure of reading an excerpt?
Monk actually goes to one of Sintara's book readings where he's surrounded by mainly middle-class white readers, thrilled by her authentic voice. Except Sintara's background seems pretty much as bourgeois as that of her audience. Straight from the Hamptons, as they say.
Yo, Sharonda, girl, you be pregnant again? If I is, Ray Ray is gonna be a real father this time around.
Monk is depressed, not just at the hypocrisy, but at the limited options he sees open to him. It's not as if he doesn't want a wider readership. He's sick of the academic world, his backbiting colleagues and the blinkered students he has to teach. He also has issues with his family, his siblings and his increasingly erratic mother.
Listen, Monk, you need some time off. Why don't you go back and spend a little more time with your family?
You know that all successful writers are tormented by their families.
You look fat.
Okay.
All these things conspire to push him into writing what the market seems to want. So for the people who lapped up Sintara Golden's Wheeze Lives in Da Ghetto, here's My Pathology. No, scrub that. My Pathology.
Look at what they published. Look at what they expect us to write.
just want to rub their noses in it.
As a bitter joke, he sends it to his agent Arthur, who, as a black man himself, is appalled. But as an agent, he fires it off to a bunch of publishers. The publishers who were so lukewarm about Monk's recent literary work. And wouldn't you know it?
We sold your book.
No.
We believe Mr. Lee has written a bestseller.
It's a joke. The most lucrative joke you've ever told.
Now, is Stagg a pseudonym?
Yeah.
Mr. Lee can't use his real name.
They love it, needless to say. It ticks every available box. Diversity, apparent authenticity, gangster chic, white guilt, and the added frisson that the newly named Stagg R. Lee may in fact be a runaway criminal. And once he's on the gravy train, Monk finds himself having to go with it.
Is this based on your actual life?
Yeah, you think some bitch-ass college boy can come up with that shit?
No, I don't.
American Fiction may look, at first glance, like a one-joke comedy. A good joke, mind you, but essentially, how long can our hero get away with his scam? But it's not that, or at least not just that. The theme is racism, of course, but more the expectations racism demands.
I'd be standing outside in the night.
Deadbeat dads, rappers, crack.
You said you wanted black stuff.
That's black, right?
I see what you're doing.
In fact, all the characters in American Fiction fight against the usual stereotypes. The fact that Monk's entire family are doctors, for instance, even if his doctorate is actually in English. His brother Cliff, a chemist who uses his own doctorate for recreational drugs, is amused.
What the hell did you give her?
It's oxycodone, but knocks him right out.
You gave her opioids to sleep?
Yeah. You ever seen a heroin addict? Those guys take naps standing up.
It's dangerous.
Look, I'm keeping an eye on her. I'm a doctor.
So am I.
Right. Maybe if we need to revive a sentence.
The obvious target of American Fiction is the smug, liberal, white audience. I'm watching wealthy publishers and movie producers thrilling at the chance to engage with racial politics, so long as they don't have to be the ones saying it, is often excruciating.
We love it.
What?
It is very,
black?
Yes, that's it. I'm happy you said it and not me.
Best thing in the film is the great Jeffrey Wright as Monk. After years of adding class to everything from The Hunger Games and James Bond to the movies of Jim Jarmusch and Wes Anderson, Wright is finally front, centre, the whole thing in American Fiction.
They ran 300,000 copies.
Your books change people's lives.
They're offering $4 million for movie rights.
Yes! The dumber I behave, the richer I get.
He won't win an Oscar, not this year anyway. The ambivalent ending of American Fiction will see to that. But by missing out, maybe he'll be given a chance at a simpler, more Oscar-friendly role next time. And on that reminder of where the stress lies and the word show business, it's time to go. I'm Simon Morris, and I hope you'll join me at the movies, same time next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.